Well, welcome to the Labor Beat Radio program, hosted by my good friend and I, J.B. Christensen. We've been doing this off and on for more years. Once you get over double digits, you know, you have to start. I think you have to stop saying how many years it was, but people start figuring out how old you are. Which in
we don't want that.
Anyway, and my good pal Scott Marshall is here from many years back, and also we have our guest this morning, Chad Francis from United Mine Workers of America. I cheaply asked him on this morning to because I know he was very active and well informed about the battle of public workers in West Virginia to protect their insurance and their wages and jobs, but also hopefully update us a little bit on the status of the people at Warrior Met. By the way, if you all see this guy on the screen that says Read AI Meeting, that's a bot that Zoom, I mistakenly installed from Zoom, and it does what it does is it creates a printed transcript of the audio feed, okay?
Wow.
Yeah, it's a little AI, you know, feature from Zoom. But anyway.
In case you go deaf. Right?
Yeah. Anyway, welcome, everybody. Well, Chad, if you could introduce yourself a little better than I did, and what you're about, and maybe give us a open up with a little update on I know you're very active at during the whole legislative conference with the AFL-CIO and in the recent session of the West Virginia Legislature, which did what to PEIA, the Public Employees Insurance? Why don't you tell us?
Yes, first, I'd like to thank you guys for having me on. Of course, it's a pleasure to be on here. My name's Chad Francis. I worked at McElroy Coal Mine, had 10 years underground, 5 on the surface. And the last 5 years, I've been working for the mine workers, doing a lot of lobbying, working with our friends at the AFL, Josh Sword, and all of our labor friends down there. They work hard every day during session. I don't believe they get enough credit. We try to make, right now, we're trying to make bad bills a little bit better right now is what we're trying to do. But as far as PEIA, I believe it was drafted kind of to undermine a critical program by shifting more of the financial burden onto the employees and reducing benefits. I mean, this is unacceptable. Our public employees deserve better. Our state employees never really made much money, but they've always had good benefits. And now it's getting to the point where there's going to be a lot of folks just say it's not worth it. If we want to attract the best and the brightest to work in our state, if we want people teaching our kids, driving our school buses, taking care of the roads we drive on every day that are competent, we've got to make sure they're paid properly and have decent benefits. And it's kind of going in the wrong direction. I'm hoping the legislature during interims, maybe they'll revisit this. I don't have a lot of hope, but I'm hoping that's something that happens.
Well, can you give us a little, my understanding is that the insurance premiums will, for many state employees, or at least for some fraction of them, result in the fact that they'll have actually an effective pay cut. Is that true?
Yeah. Now, they got a pay raise, but there are some state employees, depending on how they were, they had there was one amendment in there that passed, or part of the bill, that where if you have a spouse, you pay a penalty, basically, if you want to have them covered on PEIA if they have other insurance. So it could actually work out, even with the pay raise they received, that they're going to end up taking a pay cut. And I believe it was like 26% premium increases.
Wow.
I mean, it's crazy. It was between 14 and 26, depending. But it's not a good thing. Not at all. Especially if we had a huge budget surplus. I mean, if there was a time to make PEIA whole, right. This was the time to do it. I mean, I'm happy everybody got tax breaks. I think everybody likes tax breaks. There's nothing wrong with that. But we want to make sure our state employees are compensated for their work properly.
Right.
And I don't know that that's happening now.
For example, when you say 26% premium increase, so that's out of pocket every month, or like a deduction from your paycheck to cover it, or is... And what happened to co-pays? I mean, there's co-pay is a different aspect, right?
Yeah. my understanding, the pay raises were, and I believe around $2,200-$2,300. And with this bill that passed, it's basically around $2,200-$2,300. It's going to pass on to the employee. So it's for some employees, it's going to be a wash. Some employees, they might make a little bit. Some employees are going to end up paying more. That's the way I understood the bill.
How did the state police end up, by the way? I think they're covered, right? Do you know how
they're
how
covered? They're covered under PEIA. Now, they have received additional pay raises recently, but we can't keep state police, especially like over where you guys are from, over in the Eastern Panhandle. There were some bills that were introduced, actually, like that had locality pay in,
right,
in them, and they died. That would have helped, I think. But
right. Yeah,
it just makes it hard, especially when you're in border counties. I mean, there are a lot of border counties around West Virginia, and these other states are paying more. I understand why folks are leaving the state. A lot of people I graduated with are working in Maryland right now because as teachers, because they can make more money.
You can make $10,000 more a year in Washington County, and I think 15 more in Loudoun County.
Well, there you go.
Roughly, you know, so, and you have people with degree, if they have a master's degree here in teaching, which they would qualify them for some raise, but it qualifies them for so much bigger raise if they can move over to the neighboring counties that it's, and then the number of substitute teachers, or the percentage proportion of substitute teachers seems to be rising. Am I wrong about that? I mean, that's the information.
Too. I mean, right now we can't keep or hire state workers. Everybody's working short staffed right now. And like the cut benefits at this point, it just doesn't make sense.
Right. I know. It's very tough. Let me move on just for a second and ask you whether I'm anxious to do this about the, how are the people at Warrior Met since there's been a back to work order? I don't know what the story about the, settlement non-settlement is, but
that's been a very difficult. I was down there a good bit. Great group of folks down there, and they went out on strike. Overwhelmingly voted down a contract about 23, 24 months ago,
right?
April 1st of that year, and this year on March 2nd, President Roberts he issued a statement asking everybody to go back to work. I mean, he said, we're entering a new phase of our efforts to win our members and their families the fair and decent contract they need and deserve. He stated that we've been locked out into this struggle for 23 months now, and nothing has materially changed. The two sides have essentially fought each other to a draw thus far, despite the company's unlawful bargaining posture the entire time. The status quo is not good for our members and families. President Roberts said the company continues to pay their temporary replacement workers above and beyond, you know, what we were asking in a contract, as much as wages and bonuses up to $2,000 more per month than we were asking at the table. If it's going to pay that kind of money, we believe, you know, it should be going to our members in Alabama rather than the out-of-state scabs that they brought in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a rough situation. With prices of coal the way they were, I mean, Met Coal was breaking records. You were getting $500 to $600 a ton for Met Coal,
mm-hmm.
and they were running between half and two thirds capacity, I was told, and they're still making money. Maybe not the money they would have made if they were running full production, but when coal prices are this high, it was very bad for the strike and disheartening for a lot of families. Our thoughts are, Our members are going back to work. Hopefully, Warrior Met comes to the table, and we can get a good contract. I mean, we're going to continue to fight and do what's right. These guys were, after bankruptcy, the members at Warrior Met, I believe it was 2015, took significant pay cuts after the company went through bankruptcy. Right. Did the company a favor. They put that company on their back and carried them through a hard time. And when they became solvent again, their contract came up. Warrior Met reneged on the deal that they had basically with the workers there that they were going to be compensated properly. And here we are.
Yeah.
Years later, still battling. And we're going to continue to fight and get them a fair contract.
You know, it's very interesting, you know, the story you just told about, 3 years ago, and the company was you guys carried it through, you know, and then the company makes promises, oh, we'll take care of you, we'll take care of you. And at the end of the road, you get nothing out of it. Then that's the exact narrative, right, JB, that we just heard over at the Sherwin-Williams picket line in Williamsport, Maryland, where these guys worked all the way through the pandemic, doing all this kind of extra hours to run this pretty automated paint factory. And they got all these promises because it couldn't get anybody to come into work during the pandemic, and these guys did. And worked extra shifts. And then they get to the end and they get nothing after all these promises. And so they're now on strike almost over 100 days, right, JB? JB?
Yeah, the last time was 134, so it's probably about 140 now.
Yeah, 140 days. So, everybody knows, by the time you people have run through their any vacation or other time, or they have, that's a hard-boiled situation and strike like that. So my heart goes out. Yeah, Scott.
I wanted to ask Chad a question, but first I just want to give a shout out to your president. He probably doesn't remember me, but I met him several times on picket lines. And one time I was with a group bringing, years and years before he was, long before he was president, we were bringing supplies to one of the picket lines for the strikers. And I can't remember which strike that was. But anyway, he's a great guy. I really like him. So. But the question I have is the whole fight for a just transition for mine workers. Roberts is supporting a just transition, and there should be a lot of work being done on that. But I just wonder. Is there anything new on that, or how are things going with this idea of a just transition, to more sustainable? Roberts is part of, I can't remember the name of the organization, but an organization that's fighting for just transition stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, Scott, thank you. I'm sure President Roberts and Secretary Treasurer Sanson, I know they're the best folks to work for. I'm really appreciative. They've done everything and been everywhere. Well, we've got two of the greatest leaders in the labor movement today. The just transition, we do believe in a just transition. And there has been a little bit of movement, not as much as we've seen, but there's been a lot of federal money released. And we're trying to make sure some of it comes back and helps these coal miners in these coal communities, including there was a news release and hopefully hear movement on it soon about Sparks Energy, a battery plant that's supposed to be coming to West Virginia.
Right.
Hopefully that comes we were told that they're going to hire laid off coal miners. We'll be starting that place up, and they've actually been in talks with us. So hopefully that happens soon. Also, a lot of reclamation work. Through the AML, hopefully some of that starts moving, that opens up. But we do believe that all these new energy jobs that are coming in across the country, our stance in it is because of the shift on the federal level to cleaner energy, that laid off coal miners ought to have first rights to those jobs.
Absolutely.
And it ought to be a union job.
Amen.
That's right. That's
Amen.
Right.
Yes. Well, I think when you say it's, what would be an example of progress on that, for example, that would be a sign that it's a serious question, the transition, that we're not going to just tip our hat to the jobs of energy workers in making this transition, but we're actually going to do something about it. And because I know there's a, you know, I mean, there's a low level of confidence in follow through here in many areas, and there's a lot of skepticism that anybody really, you know, gives a damn about the workers in these factories. So, I mean, outside of the labor movement does. I mean, that's part of our tradition, is that you don't leave people behind, and you find something for everybody to do. You know, what would be an example of the battery plants that you mentioned, and recognizing the UMWA or at least giving them a fair chance to make a union, is a good example. Are there others that come to mind?
Hopefully there's more. I believe the steelworkers and the building trades have been involved with some new jobs, including with the AML. I'd heard, I'm not positive on the name, but I know the steelworkers are actually working on a project also. I might have to search on that. But we're just going to have to remain vigilant and continue to try to get these jobs in these coal communities throughout the state. There's a lot of hills and hollers throughout the state that really relied on coal for many years. Mm-hmm. And those jobs aren't there, and they've become in some places desolate. And some of the families have stayed. If we're going to bring these jobs in, we're just going to have to remain vigilant. And I do believe that we're going to have baseload power, and I do believe coal's going to be in the mix for at least another 20 years, maybe 20%.
Right.
It's never going to be once what it was, but we want to retain those jobs and try to move forward and add on and have some of these new energy jobs, hopefully be UMWA members working at them, and the good paying, good benefits.
That's right.
We just got to hope that it works out. I mean, and continue to work for it, and continue to fight, and continue to speak for our members. And one thing I did want to touch on, John, also, is if you get a chance, go on to our website, umwa.org, and President Roberts has a great clip on there talking about labor law reform.
And
stand up, fight back.
I think we'll play that before the show's over here.
Yeah.
You know, that sounds a great way to do that. Absolutely, pal.
You know, I just remembered the name of the organization that Roberts is a leader of is the Labor for Sustainability, and that's the organization that's really fighting for just transition. Anyway, the fact that you got the leader of the mine workers union leading this organization is just an incredible.
It's the right thing to do.
Tribute to his fighting spirit and that, and you know, and again, all of us have to get out there and fight on this. That there's a just transition, and that those are union jobs.
Hey, one last on the energy question. Just one last question, Chad. I read that both Josh and Andy, and I don't know whether Cecil Roberts was at it, but there was this summit in the state that I think Manchin helped organize. Which included Bill Gates, a guy I used to work for, about transitioning the coal plants into nuclear power facilities. You got any information? I mean, that was seemed like a pretty. Usually, Bill doesn't. When Bill shows up to a meeting, everyone's looking at him. You know, he's got a gigantic dollar sign on top of his head. So. I just wondered whether you had any additional information on what that was about.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I'm not privy to that information. I'm a little leery about nuclear, but that's me. I mean, maybe with Fukushima and Chernobyl.
Right.
I mean, it still resonates in the back of my mind, and you know, I'm kind of one of those guys not in my backyard.
Yeah, right.
It's about
exactly.
3 Mile Island.
Yeah, well,
yeah, that's another one.
Yeah, but you know, there's another form of energy that's looking very promising It's called Fusion, I think. And it's a process that I can't describe it, but it's a different, it's not dangerous. In theory, it has no waste,
but yeah. Hey, you know, the breakthrough,
I don't think it's 10 years out. They're
yeah, it is.
Well, they're already experimenting with it.
All right. Well, 10 years from now, we'll all find out.
They proved that it works.
They proved that you can get more energy out than you put in. That's what they proved.
Right.
Okay. Wow. Which is
very small scale. I mean, they got a long way to go to bring it up.
Well, let me one other thing. I know the first time I called you, Chad, that that you said that we were talking about the time, and you said, "Well, you're in the middle of organizing campaigns." And how do you? That's something dear to my heart. Is that how do you? We know that there's a lot of stuff happening. There's been this election victory, this unlikely election victory in Staten Island with the union organizing out Amazon workers, and then this movement amongst Starbucks workers that's had 200 and some election victories. Already, and that's pretty phenomenal to anybody in organizing. What are you hearing from workers that you're talking to and trying to organize? And is there a change there? What's your feel for the mood among unorganized workers?
Especially with the stuff going on with state employees in West Virginia right now. We're really trying to reach out to anybody that works for the Department of Highways, Office of Mine Health Safety Training, DMV, DNR. They can be members of the UMWA, and we're going to represent them. We give them the best representation that is offered in our state by far. We offer them benefits through American Income Life and Union Plus. We lobby for them at the state capitol. We're going to represent them in through the grievance procedure. If anybody wants to join, if they're listening, please go to umwa.org, type in West Virginia State Employees in the search bar, and we'd love for you to be a member of the United Mine Workers, the best union in the state, in my personal opinion, in the whole country.
All right,
man. Is that something new, Chad?
What's that?
Is that something new to try to get public employees involved?
Over the last year, we've been moving toward that. Now, we're still organizing coal mines, but we do have state employees, and we've been doing pretty well at it so far, and we want to be there for them. I mean, we've always been hand in hand with, you know, everybody's kind of got their jurisdiction. You know, AFT has the teacher, CWA, they've got corrections, and right now the Department of Highways, we talked with the AFL, and we have the right to organize the Department of Highways, Office of Mine Health Safety Training, DMV, DNR. So we're hopefully
very underpaid.
Well, hey, let me.
They're very underpaid.
Why don't I play this clip from President Roberts here? Okay, and then see what the comment is. Here we go.
All right. That'd be great.
Of course, this video won't work over the thing.
On April 1st of 2021, United Mine Workers went on strike against Warrior Met. Obviously, that's not the first strike we ever had in the United States. The longest strike in history was by the United Mine Workers of America in 1946 for pensions and health care. When I was born, my dad was on strike for health care, and I was born in the bedroom of a company house. So that tells you what kind of health care we had before the union came along. So we have a long, long history at United Mine Workers fighting for justice. And we knew back in 1912, 1913, that unions take bad jobs and make them good jobs. Coal mining jobs used to be the most dangerous jobs in the world, and they're still not the safest, but they're a lot safer now because of the labor movement and the fights that we went through early on in the creation of our existence in 1890. So we know what unions are about. We know what unions do. Union coal miners are currently some of the highest paid workers in the world, has some of the best working conditions, some of the best terms and conditions of employment, all because they have a union. Without a union, once again, working in a coal mine would be the worst job in the United States of America. But let's think about what's happened over the years. In 1912 and 13, they were shooting it out, and whoever had the most power would prevail. But the state government and the federal government didn't want unions in West Virginia, didn't want unions anywhere. Then as time went on, we finally passed the Wagner Act, and the UMWA grew to be the largest union in the world. And we didn't just rest on our laurels. John L. Lewis decided that auto workers and steel workers and rubber workers and textile workers needed a union. Communication workers needed a union, and lots of coal miner money was spent on those efforts.
The AFL-CIO Union Industries Show, a panorama of the skills and crafts of union labor, presented by labor and management cooperatively to focus attention on the day-in, day-out good working relationship between American workers and free enterprise employers.
But then the powers to be decided unions, workers shouldn't have this kind of power. So in 1947, they handed us the Taft-Hartley Act.
There's lots of people in this country that can't reason intimately from cause to effect, who don't understand the equation behind this anti-labor move in this country, this destruction of the dignity of labor, this constant assault on coal miners.
But let's just think a minute about where we are right now. Let's use Warrior Met as an example. First of all, bankruptcy laws. Jim Walter Resources was signatory to our national contract. They declared bankruptcy. The bankruptcy judge said that contract doesn't exist anymore. In addition to that, the retirees who have health care, they don't have health care anymore. Then the judge, on top of that, said these properties can be sold free and clear. What happens? Well, here comes the Wall Street investors now to pick what's left of our body. And we had to bargain a contract with these investors that was not up to scale. But that's the only way we could have gotten our people back to work. By the way, the union was declared to be out of these mines, too. This wasn't the only place, by the way, this happened. This was happening everywhere throughout the coal fields. We went through a 10-year fight here for pensions and health care. We finally passed legislation in 2017 that passed, it saved the health care of 22,600 retired miners and their dependents. And then in 2019, we won this fight for pensions and health care for 100,000 people. People in Alabama today who retired from the coal industry have a pension, and they have health care for one reason only, because United Mine Workers exist. But let's get back to this two-year fight here. Is it part of the legacy of the United States of America that workers can lose their job, lose their right to union representation, lose their pensions, and lose their health care in a bankruptcy court? So we will go on an unfair labor practice strike. What happens? As opposed to bargaining with the union to reach a decent contract, the first thing that happens is advertisements all over the United States at coalfield. Come to Alabama, high wages, high benefits. All you got to do is cross the picket line. Scabs from Tennessee, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Ohio, Utah came here and took the jobs of these strikers. Well, that wasn't all that happened. Within weeks, we got an injunction from some state court saying you can't talk, you can't speak out, you can't call somebody a bad name that's taking your job. You can't be within 900 feet of an entrance to Warrior Met. And by the way, Here comes the state police sent by the Republican governor to escort scabs from out of state into the onto the properties. You got the judge saying you can't be within 900 feet of these entrances. You got the state police sent there by the governor. We need labor law reform. And I submit to you that scabbing and replacement workers have to go if you're ever going to have a level playing field in America. People would join unions by the millions if they could. We make it so difficult in this country to join a union that it is unbelievable. These private meetings, these intimidation, lawyers from all over the United States getting $3,000 an hour to figure out how to keep workers from having a fair deal. We've lived it here for 2 years, and we went back to work because that's the law says we can. If this wasn't an unfair labor practice strike, all those replacement workers that took the jobs of these workers would be permanent. And the strikers would have to get in line and fight for a job opportunity someplace they've been for 10, 15, or 20, or 30 years. Friends and neighbors, brothers and sisters, anybody listening to this, I know there's going to be conservatives that get angry at me. I don't care. And I know some people might think you're being too radical. I don't care. I'm just telling the truth right now. It's time for organized labor and workers across this country to stand up and fight back and elect people to office who believe in the right to join a union. People run around everywhere praising unions, but it's time to act.
Hear, hear.
That's right.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Oh, man. All right. He is the best.
I just wanted to add something about this strike wave that's going on. You know, both the I think it's really telling about the future of labor. Both Starbucks and Amazon are demanding that they have national contracts.
That's great
for their workers, and that is actually what led to the CIO. If you remember your history, I think that that's just another indication of how fight back the labor movement's getting. And the other thing is that it's building all of these coalitions with all of these different organizations. It's just right. It's just incredible. I think that there's a Case will pardon me, it's a real upswing.
Yes, I agree, Scott. Anyway, this is a reference to our previous discussion about an article that Scott sent me that he didn't think I read right. You know, so anyway.
Well, you know what, John? One of the things I was thinking is that we ought to think about inviting that author to be on the show.
If you get a hold of him, I won't say no.
Chad might know how to do that.
Well, who's the author?
Tim Kelly?
No, it's Robert Putnam.
Oh, and okay.
Oh, yeah, no. Okay. I'd love to get Robert Putnam. He's great. He's an important guy. Anyway, I think we got a fantastic podcast here, guys, and I'm proposing that we basically, bring it to a close here, because I don't think people like to listen to hour long podcasts. They like half hour long podcasts, you know.
I want to thank you all for having me on, and I'm going to leave y'all with a couple quotes. One from President Josh Sword, and we got to remember that elections have consequences. And one from Mother Jones, a favorite of mine. You got to pray for the dead. And you got to fight like hell for the living.
Amen, brother. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. Okay. All right.
Thank you all.
Hey, thanks, Scott. So if you can get a hold of that guy, let's get him online.
Okay.
All right, man.
God bless Cecil Roberts.
Yeah, beautiful. All right, everybody. Thank you. It's late, but everything comes next. You've been listening to the Labor Beat Radio program, a production of Enlightened Radio, which you can always find at www.enlightenedradio.org. We broadcast live at 7:30 a.m. Eastern on Tuesday mornings, and you can reach us for comment or communications via email at host at enlightenedradio, all one word, .org. host.enlightenedradio.org. Host at enlightenedradio.org. So if you send me a message, we'll get back to you. Take care. All right, that was great.